Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Britta Cruz, registration number 41572. I represent Mr. Berdahl. I'd like to reserve some of my time for rebuttal, please. The issue before this court is whether the warrantless pat-down search of Mr. Berdahl, who was not suspected of any crime and whom officers did not believe to be armed and dangerous, violated the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution and or Article 2, Section 7, of the Colorado Constitution. I'd like to begin by briefly discussing the unique circumstances leading up to the search in this case. It's a very cold day in January, temperatures hovering right around freezing. Mr. Berdahl's car had run out of gas, causing he and his girlfriend to be stranded on a rural stretch of highway. Probably not anticipating being stranded that day, Mr. Berdahl was dressed only in pants and long sleeves. As it turned out, Mr. Berdahl and his girlfriend actually remained stranded overnight in the frigid temperatures because no one would or could come pick them up. To make matters worse, that their cell phone batteries were dead and neither had any cash or credit cards at the time. By the time Officer Walzer and Trooper Reynolds finally made contact with Mr. Berdahl and his girlfriend the next morning, both were shaking and shivering, borderline hypothermic. Ultimately, Trooper Reynolds offered to drive Mr. Berdahl and his girlfriend to a nearby gas station because the weather conditions were too extreme for them to remain on the side of the road. Throughout this entire encounter, Mr. Berdahl was always cooperative, never aggressive. Neither Walzer nor Reynolds suspected Mr. Berdahl of any crime, neither believed Mr. Berdahl was intoxicated, and neither had any reason to believe that Mr. Berdahl was armed and dangerous. Nevertheless, and in spite of the fact that Mr. Berdahl had been searched and transported without incident previously by Officer Walzer, Reynolds informed Mr. Berdahl that he had to be patted down a second time before being allowed in Reynolds' car.
Does the record show that Reynolds knew Mr. Berdahl had been previously patted down by the deputy?
I think the record is unclear on that point, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Reynolds informed Mr. Berdahl that he needed to be patted down, having no other option but to submit to the search or freeze on the side of the road. Mr. Berdahl accepted that ultimatum and submitted to the search. During the search, no weapons were found. However, Trooper Reynolds did discover a small amount of methamphetamine in a pipe. Now, the precedent concerning protective frisks is well established. A police officer is permitted to conduct a warrantless pat-down search of a person who is not in custody only when there's reasonable and articulable suspicion the person is presently armed and dangerous. Here, it's undisputed that there was no reasonable and articulable suspicion that Mr. Berdahl was then armed and dangerous. Indeed, the officers both concede that there was nothing about Mr. Berdahl specifically that led them to believe he was a safety threat.
Ms. Cruz?
Yes.
Is an officer entitled to do a pat-down search absent that suspicion if the person they want to pat down has given consent to the pat-down?
I would agree that consent would be an exception. It is another well-defined exception, as is Terry's reasonable suspicion standard. However, as I argued in my brief and as the trial court properly found in this case, there was no consent. Mr. Berdahl had no choice but to consent. The record adequately supports the trial court's findings that Mr. Berdahl had no choice. The weather conditions were extreme. He had no alternatives. The record also supports the trial court's finding that Mr. Berdahl was merely submitting to Reynolds' lawful authority. Mr. Berdahl had already been searched once. Now he was being told he was going to search again. At that point, a reasonable person in Mr. Berdahl's position is going to believe that submitting to a search is just something that he's required to do. Under these circumstances, I don't believe that Mr. Berdahl's conduct rises to the level of consent, and the trial court made the proper finding on that point.
In terms of your position that Mr. Berdahl had no other choice, does it matter that the police officers didn't in any sense, cause or contrive the other alternative, which is spend another night by the side of the road?
I think the trial court recognize that this situation, it would just be a legal fiction to believe that Mr. Berdahl had any other choice. And I do not believe that because the situation was precipitated by Mr. Berdahl running out of gas and finding himself in this situation, that that should affect the court's analysis. The reality was what it was. Mr. Berdahl was stranded and the officers arrived to help. It was a situation where Mr. Berdahl was in distress, he was under duress, and under those circumstances, you can't find consent in this case.
Ms. Cruz, when we look at consent or lack of consent, part of our concern is whether there's been an exercise of any coercion to obtain the coalescence or consent or whatever we're going to call it here. Is there any evidence that the police coerced Mr. Berdahl in any way to accept a ride in the car?
Perhaps not in that classic sense that you're implying, but I do believe that this was a situation where the officer said, I'm going to pat you down in order for you to get in this car. And I think the implication of the situation is they were not going to allow Mr. Berdahl to remain on the side of the road. And in that sense, I think the officer's demand, coupled with the circumstances, certainly deprived Mr. Berdahl of his free will to make a voluntary choice in this matter.
So let's go to that point as well. Does the record indicate that they were insisting that he be transported to get the gasoline, as opposed to that it was just unspoken, that it, you know, you can stay in the car or you can go with us? I mean, because what I'm looking at is the consent issue, and I'm looking at coercion, and I'm looking at this issue about, you know, is it a matter that the choice was denied him by the coercive conduct of the police?
The record doesn't explain what conversations the officers had with Mr. Berdahl. What's clear from the record is that Mr. Berdahl needed the ride, and the officers needed to give him the ride. And I think that's what actually makes this situation so unique. 99% of the cases when someone is being transported in a squad car, they're in custody and therefore subject to a search, or they're in a situation where they're able to voluntarily consent, or there's at least some other attendant circumstances other than the fact of transportation alone that would satisfy Terry's relatively forgiving standard. In those 99% of cases, the search is permissible. This case represents that 1% where none of those factors are present. And that's why the search in this case was not permissible.
Thank you.
Under these circumstances, is a court required to consider the police officer's conduct?
I think that is part of the totality of the circumstances, certainly.
And did the court do that here?
I believe so. The trial court's finding in this case was pretty exceptional. The court clearly took its responsibility very seriously. It began by making its credibility determinations and then systematically addressing every single issue from both Mr. Berdahl's point of view and the officer's point of view, the entire totality of the circumstances. However, upon close reading of the trial court's order, it really boils down to one fact and one fact alone, and that's transportation by squad car. Essentially, what the court has done in this case is created a per se search incident to a squad car exception to the Fourth Amendment, to use a phrase coined by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Per se rules in the area of search and seizure have long been disfavored and eschewed by both our courts and the United States Supreme Court, including the court in D'Andrea, which the trial court and the Attorney General both rely heavily on. And I'd like to take a minute to talk about D'Andrea, actually. Of course, it's my position that the holding in D'Andrea is not controlling here and implied to very different circumstances. To the extent that D'Andrea has some application to this case, it actually does not support the trial court's ruling, because D'Andrea was very careful and very explicit that they were not adopting a per se rule. The court stated that in every case, you need to do this case-by-case analysis, considering all of the circumstances, to determine whether the pat-down search is going to be reasonable in that particular case. And I don't believe that's what happened here. Although the court goes through the motions, ultimately its conclusion rests on this one factor. And that one factor alone in this case does not justify the search. Another issue I wanted to address really briefly is the officer's testimony that there's nothing about Mr. Berdahl that we believed would make him in particular be a safety threat. What we were doing was just searching him pursuant to our practice or policy. But I want to point out that the state has never argued in this case that the search was justified by the existence of some standardized policy. And it is the state's burden to prove that a search falls within a recognized exception to the warrant requirement. And here, apart from the officer's vague testimony, there really is no evidence of a standard formal policy. Indeed, based on the evidence, there either was no standard policy, or to the extent there was a policy, it was obviously so undefined as to be susceptible to arbitrary application, as evidenced by the officer's decision not to search Mr. Berdahl's girlfriend in this case. So given these unusual circumstances, we have a stranded motorist. He's not suspected of any crime. There's absolutely nothing whatsoever about the circumstances to indicate that this person in particular poses an officer safety threat. The search here is not permissible under either the United States Constitution or the Colorado Constitution, which has been interpreted many times to provide greater protection. In this case, the jury necessarily relied on this unconstitutionally obtained evidence in reaching its verdict. Therefore, reversal is required. If the court has no further questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, please. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Nicole Wiggins, registration number 42702, appearing on behalf of the people today. Your Honors, the contact in this case was at all times consensual, and no constitutional provisions are therefore implicated. The officers contacted defendant based on a welfare check because his car ran out of gas on the side of the road in a cold morning. They only contacted him out of concern for his safety, and that was made clear to him from the beginning and throughout the duration of this encounter. The officers used a very calm, non-threatening tone when interacting with the defendant. At no time was he restrained. At no time was he interrogated. At no time did the officers display their weapons. And in fact, one of the officers testified this was a consensual encounter, and he wasn't going to order the defendant to do anything because he was simply there on a motorist assist. And that's what we're dealing with in this case. Defendant was free to walk away at any point, refuse the officer's help, and end the encounter.
Does the state dispute that the reality was he can get a ride in the trooper's car or freeze to death?
No, Your Honor. It's clear that the choices defendant had were get into the car or stay there and try to figure something else out from there. But it's also clear that the officer's only choice...
My question was a little different.
Okay.
I mean, just to say his choice was to stay there. Does the state dispute that by staying there, he would be subject to significant risk of freezing to death?
I do dispute that, Your Honor, to the extent that we don't know. We don't know necessarily what would happen to Mr. Berdahl after the police left him there. So I do dispute that.
Okay, I apologize for interrupting you, sir.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Your Honor. And we do put forth that the pat-down was also consensual in this case. A police officer's request of a citizen to consent to a pat-down does not automatically convert a consensual encounter into a seizure, and that's not what happened in this case. Compliance was not required. Compliance was never conveyed to the defendant. Defendant was free to leave. Defendant was free to refuse that pat-down. The officer, again, used a casual tone in informing defendant that in order to transport him in his vehicle, he needed to pat him down briefly.
Ms. Wiggins, was this a request where the police officer received verbal consent, or was this the police officer saying, I'm going to pat you down, and there was compliance?
There was a request by the officer, and the defendant did not verbally consent, but he did physically and voluntarily consent when he took over action to go to the officer's patrol car and basically assume the position to be searched. He had undisputedly already submitted to a pat-down earlier. Presumably, he knew what was going on, and that's why he did what he did, because he was consenting to that search. He did not verbally consent, but his actions implied consent nonetheless. And while the trial court's order did state that the pat-down was non-consensual, I believe the defendant is misunderstanding the trial court's order. What the trial court was really stating in that order was not that it wasn't consensual, but that it wasn't voluntary because the defendant had no choice under the circumstances.
What's the difference?
The difference is the fact that
I asked a poor question. Let's assume, and I'm not asking to concede the point, let's just assume the trial court is correct. The defendant had no choice because he was going to freeze to death.
Okay.
How does the consent inquiry change that?
The consent inquiry is changed when you consider the police action in this matter, which was minimal. And if I'm understanding your question correctly, the consent was voluntary because the police didn't put any pressure on him to consent. Any pressure that was felt by the defendant was from the elements. It was not from the government. It was not from police action.
Okay, now is the state's position then that no matter how dire would be the alternative, his consent can still be treated as voluntary for purposes of the Fourth Amendment?
Yes, Your Honor. When the state does not in any way put any sort of pressure on a defendant. A lot of cases have held, you know, we do take into consideration a defendant's subjective characteristics, his perceptions, but the determining factor is the police conduct. Did the police put any sort of pressure on a defendant to consent or not consent? And in this case, there was no such pressure. So the pat-down was consensual in the sense that the government isn't trying to put anything on a defendant. Excuse me. The police did not create the adverse circumstances here, and therefore the consent cannot be determined to be involuntary or non-consensual, as the trial court found. There was no evidence the defendant was forced to get in that patrol car. He never said anything. Excuse me, Your Honors. He never said anything to the extent of he was feeling forced to enter that car. And in addition, the officers had previously offered him medical attention, which he refused. So the fact that the idea that he had no other option is just incorrect, because he did have an option and he declined that option.
What medical attention did they offer him?
When Officer, I believe it was Walser, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, first contacted defendant, he essentially said, "You look cold, would you like me to call medical personnel for you to be transported to a hospital, presumably? And the defendant declined that offer of help.
They offered to call an ambulance.
Yes. So that was another option for the defendant, which was made clear to him from the get-go that these officers, and I'm sure the officers would probably prefer to have just called an ambulance and had the defendant taken care of in a manner in which they knew he would be safe. But he declined that offer. And, Your Honors, in this case, what the officers gave him was a second offer of help. We will offer to help you again. We will take you to a gas station. And an offer to help someone is not an ultimatum. An offer to help is simply that, an offer that can be accepted or rejected. And defendant accepted that help in this case, and under the totality of the circumstances, he he thus consented to that pat-down.
Are we bound by the trial court's factual finding that he had, as a practical matter, he had no choice?
No, Your Honor. This court can affirm on any other grounds. You don't have to rely on the trial court's finding in this instance.
Well, I mean, that's a little different than the question I'm asking. I mean, the weight we give to that finding might depend on the analysis, but aren't we bound by the factual finding that due to the weather and having been stuck there overnight and being underdressed for this practical matter?
Yes, I mean, trial court is, their factual findings are entitled to great deference from.
And there's sufficient support in the record that we can't disregard that finding.
Right, there is. Both officers did very clearly testify to the conditions, Your Honor. I don't think that's under dispute. That defendant was facing adverse circumstances given the weather.
Ms. Wiggins, I have another question about factual findings of the court. So then, are we bound by the court's factual finding that the reason that defendant refused medical care was because his significant other was still in the truck that was stranded a mile away?
Your Honor, I don't recall any support for that in the record. The defendant did explain to the police, yes, I have a significant other, but there was nothing to suggest that they could not have called medical attention for both of them. He very clearly on the record declined that medical attention. And I think the court is bound by the finding that he did reject it. And that it finds great support in the record. And to move on a little bit, I want to point out that even if this was not a consensual encounter, which of course we contend that it is, it was justified based on officer safety in this case. The touchstone of the Fourth Amendment is reasonableness. And it's quite unreasonable to ask an officer to transport an unknown and possibly armed citizen in the back of his patrol car.
Okay, are you saying then that if we sweep away all the he really had no choice analysis, the Fourth Amendment means that any citizen who gets a ride in a police car can be searched, period?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, well then what's the difference between my hypothetical any citizen can be searched as a condition of getting into the police car and what happened here?
Well, Your Honor, I think the Fourth Amendment is a case-by-case analysis, so I'm not asking the court to make a ruling as a matter of law that every citizen who gets into a patrol car has the right to or needs to expect a pat-down.
Okay, well, I appreciate your clarification. Tell me then how specifically we accept your argument without effectively announcing a rule that applies to every citizen.
Well, Your Honor, I think you just apply, you limit the holding to the facts of this case.
Okay, well, all right. Well, what are the facts of this case that justify the search, which would not be equally applicable if any of the three of us needed a ride in a police car?
Your Honor, you have a point in the respect that the officers did not have any articular suspicion of this gentleman.
Nor was he drunk.
Nor
was he acting odd. Nor was he doing, as best I can tell, anything that would warrant a search of him that wouldn't equally under the circumstances warrant a search of any of the three of us.
But he is availing himself of police help, Your Honor. And he is, besides the fact that he consented, he is getting into that vehicle expecting help, receiving help, and it's reasonable to ask for a minimal, and this was a very minimally intrusive pat down in this case, Your Honors. This wasn't something where they went through all of his pockets. This wasn't anything to that extent. They did a minimal pat down and found something right away. It was minimally intrusive and it was reasonable in this case, given the fact that this gentleman would be sitting in the back of his police car, possibly armed. Now the fact is, Wiggins, an officer knows someone, for instance. In this case, you know, the officer, this is an unknown gentleman on the side of the road.
Okay, is
he
there
has any, no idea.
Okay, are you pointing to any facts that would justify the search from an officer's safety standpoint other than that Mr. Berdahl is unknown to the officer?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Ms. Wiggins, I just wanted to ask you then, so in saying it is reasonable for a police officer to pat someone down, and let's assume that there's no policy that they do pat downs, is it reasonable to leave to a police officer's discretion who they're going to pat down, even if they have no reasonable suspicion?
Your Honor, I see that there could be some pitfalls in that, because the Fourth Amendment does prescribe, we don't want to give officers too much discretion, because that's where we run into some problems. But I think in this case, the whole point is the officers need that discretion for their safety. In this instance, when they're taking an unknown person who is abandoned for unknown reasons, it's reasonable to ask that in that instance.
Let me ask in this particular case, because it looks like the police officer exercised discretion and did not do a pat down of the girlfriend, but did a pat down of the defendant.
And Your Honor, there was conflicting testimony on that, and I was very confused by the trial court's order. The officer who performed the pat downs testified that he did pat down the girlfriend. So I was somewhat confused by the trial court's factual findings in that regard. But in that instance, we are still giving officers discretion, but I think that's discretion that needs to be given in instances such as this so that officers can protect themselves. They are trained to, you know, to understand risk and whatnot. And although they did testify, they did not sense any criminal activity afoot in this case, it is important that we give them discretion to protect themselves.
Well, if we give them that discretion, isn't it reasonable to require them to articulate some basis for exercising that discretion?
Your Honor, I'm not sure if they need a further basis.
So it's just sort of the smell test? This guy, you know, it just didn't feel right to me, so I'm going to search him? Is that all it would take?
No, Your Honor. I mean, obviously, in a sense of, well, in a consensual encounter, maybe that will work. If you're looking at a Terry, a reasonable suspicion, probable cause standard, that's going to change the analysis a little bit. But in this case, when you're dealing with a consensual encounter up to that point, I think it's very reasonable for the officer to be concerned for his safety and to do a minimally intrusive, and the whole point of the Fourth Amendment is to weigh these interests. And in this case, the officer struck the correct balance. The Fourth Amendment surely doesn't stand for the proposition that we either leave in need people on the side of the road or we transport them at the risk of officer safety. The Fourth Amendment is meant to enact a balance, and I think the officers found that balance in this case by very minimally patting the defendant down before placing them in his patrol car for safety. I'm running a low on time. If you have no further questions, the people ask that defendant's convictions be upheld. Thank you.
Ms. Cruz, I know you have a place you want to start, but I have a question. If this police officer in this situation had said to Mr. Berdahl, you have the option here of riding in my car or staying here, but if you ride in my car, I'm asking you to give consent to let me search you because I'm not going to let you ride in my car if you don't. Is that a voluntary? I mean, essentially, the policeman says what he didn't say here. That is, I'll give you two options. You can stay here or you can ride in my car. But if you ride in my car, I'm not going to let you ride in my car without me patting you down because I'll be concerned you pull a gun on me. Would that be consent?
Well, I see that the premise of Your Honor's question is that that's not exactly what happened here. Had that happened, I think under the circumstances of this case, the state's argument may be a little stronger that there had been consent, but I think given the trial court's findings, which must remain undisturbed on appeal, Mr. Berdahl had no choice. It would have been a fiction had the officer been explicit about that, and here I don't think the officer was explicit about that.
So is what you're saying, even if he had been explicit, it still would not have been consent?
I think under the facts of this case, Your Honor, no. And I think the record is clear that the officer would not have said anything like that because it appears based on the record the officers had no intention of letting Mr. Berdahl remain on the side of the road. And as the trial court pointed out in its order, that would have been a dereliction of duty.
Did the court find that this was an order or a request of the police officer?
Your Honor, I'm not sure. I believe the court may have used the word order, but I'm honestly not sure. I just want to address the state's argument briefly, their alternative argument, and I think, Judge Webb, your questions were right on point there, that given the extreme circumstances of this case, the facts of this case, if the court were to accept the state's argument here, this is a major change in the law. Terry's standard is well established. Colorado has no case concerning the search incident to squad car ride exception. We have not recognized such an exception. And if this case is the test case, boy, that's a big per se rule that we're adopting here in Colorado, and I don't think there's any basis for that under these facts. Again, I think it's irrelevant whether the contact here was consensual. Certainly the search was not. The trial court's factual findings are binding on this court because, as the state concedes, they were based in the record. Briefly to clarify, Mr. Berdahl decline medical attention. We don't know what that medical attention it was. It could have been the officer applying the medical attention. And the record is that he said, no, please, we need to, my girlfriend is still stranded. He obviously had other important things on his mind, and that offer was never repeated. I see that I've run out of time. I would just ask the court. Oh, excuse me.
Never mind.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just asked the court to reverse.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. They've been helpful. The case stands submitted. We will issue a written opinion in due course.